How's it going, everybody, and welcome to episode number 48 of Master My Garden Podcast. Now, this week's episode is one I've been looking forward to for a little while, and between one thing and another, we've been trying to link it up for a few weeks. So I'm delighted now this week to be joined by Dermot Melia, the Garden Design Studio. And Dermot is a garden designer, and a lot of you might know him from Supergarden 2019, I believe. And I suppose what really catches the eye about him, his garden designs are superb, obviously, and we'll get into a bit of that. But he's really, really good at his use of lighting. And what I find looking at his designs as well, he's very good at softening large, hard landscaped areas. And so we'll talk about that as well, about planting and layering and how you can soften things. We're also going to talk a little bit about outdoor trends at the moment. We're going to talk about colours and materials that are being used at the moment. And he's just going to give us a few tips as to how you can go about planning your own garden. So, Dermot, firstly, you're very, very welcome to Master My Garden Podcast.
Thank you, John. Good to be here. Good to be talking and sharing a little bit of information. But yeah, no, all is good. It was a pretty good year now in the garden side of things.
Yeah, as I said, it's taken us a few weeks to get this one up and running. But when we were speaking in over the last couple of weeks, we did mention on a couple of occasions, like, it has been a super year for gardening, and I know you're particularly busy. And there's a lot of things have come out of, you know, this strange year, and one of them is that people have found the gardens to be a place of solace. And I suppose with restrictions and this, that, and the other, the gardens now are becoming an outdoor entertaining space. They're becoming a family room. So over the last 12 months, or certainly since this pandemic, things have changed, and the garden is really, really important as part of a family home now.
Yeah, look, John, it's, as I said, it's this year, I think trends was changing anyway, and a lot more people were getting into gardens. And then, you know, like, it bloomed the last 10 or 11 years. And again, it has really brought gardening to the forefront of garden, Irish gardens. But I think things were changing anyway. A lot more people were sort of like bringing it outdoors, indoors and what have you. But this year, the whole lockdown and what have you, really, I think, kicked it down the road, and everybody was at home. They were locked up. It was a nice, during the first lockdown, I think it was a nice spell as well with sun. It was very sunny, it was very warm, and a lot of people were out in their gardens. They couldn't go anywhere. So even families, you know, were sort of more reuniting. The kids were more interacting with parents, and everyone was out in the garden, and that space became their area of well-being, enjoyment. I was going to say bringing friends over, but that obviously didn't happen.
But, no, that never happened.
Yeah, no, that's, we won't mention that. But anyway, definitely the outdoor space, your indoor, outdoor. And then I think as well, Supergarden, which I was part of this year and fortunate to be part of, it was just a fantastic experience. But that as well came in around the same time as the lockdown. And a lot of people watched this year, and, you know, they were looking at new trends, what was happening. Bringing the indoors, outdoors, and I think garden design as a whole, like, if you look at, like, the social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram, like, it has just exploded, yeah, all over the world, you could say, with garden design, looking at what people can do outside. And even from a fact, people that are not gardeners, what they have been doing, mini projects, people that have never even, you know, done carpentry or any little bits of construction, and here they were ringing up the hardwares and the nurseries, getting materials and actually going about this stuff themselves. It's not rocket science building gardens and what have you. Okay, there might be a little bit more of an aspect of the design side of things, but, like, you know, people were getting out there, they were buying materials, and they just started building. And yeah, it was just fantastic to watch on the internet.
Yeah, from that time, and as you rightly said, the weather was superb, and yeah, people were gathering there. But there was the amount of outdoor projects that ranged from people making, you know, flower beds and seats out of pallets, to people going whole hog and making massive big outdoor entertaining rooms. And yeah, there was so much happening on that front. And okay, as you said, it's not rocket science parts of it where you need to know your plants and all the rest of it. Probably you need a bit of knowledge there, but for the most part, in terms of the structural part of it, people were able to get out and do bits and pieces without having, you know, any real history in it.
Yeah, and I think the fact, as I said, everyone was at home, they were looking out with, you know, the majority of people four walls, because, you know, there would have been a lot of people there that used their house, because obviously, you know, everyone's busy and they use their home, a lot of people in Ireland, as basically their place to go and sleep, you know, and yeah. Then they're gone again and it's a rat race. And then, as I said, they were at home and the next thing there was four bare walls and they were out, they were looking, they were going, right, okay, like even, you know, they were going to the nurseries and garden centres or online and you know, looking up and gathering information themselves and going online and looking at plants and look at plants that looks well and what works well together. But as I said, the whole DIY aspect was just amazing this year. It was just brilliant. People were getting out, as you said, they were building stuff out of pallets. They were, you know, getting secondhand timber and stuff that they were going to be thrown out and recycled. And, you know, made fantastic little things. It was lovely to see, to be honest.
Yeah, it was great to see. You mentioned Super Garden there, and maybe you tell us a little bit about that. I know it was a very good show, and as you say, there was a big audience for this year. So maybe just tell us a bit about your participation in it, your garden.
Yeah, I think to be honest, John, I didn't really know what I was going into or what I was going to experience, but the whole experience from start to finish was just it was just fantastic. You know, the company that ran it. I think it was VIP Studios, and again, so professional, really, really good, from start to finish. But yeah, look at, you know, it went very quick. Like I had sort of thought about it at the end of last year, and then someone mentioned it again in maybe February to me, and I just sent in a CV, and I was brought in. I was interviewed over in the production studio place, and interviewed, and they rang me back a couple of days later to say you've got it. And there was four other people as well that got it. And it went from there, but it moved very, very fast because obviously we weren't thinking COVID. There was no such thing as COVID or lockdown. And we were just like I put it this way, for anybody even thinking of doing it, like it's a real intense 3 weeks, like really, really intense. You're giving it all. It's really, really a lot of focus because people just think you're there building the garden for 3 weeks, but there's a lot of organizing, like, you know, your plant, your design, to be honest. Like I myself had designed a garden, a very clean cut contemporary straight lines garden, and then I met the homeowner, which was a little bit in reverse, but it was the way it was. And I met the homeowner, and lovely girl, great family, and they were like, oh, we're from the country and we love natural, we love flowers, we love you know, anything natural. So I was thrown into the situation, oh my god, I have designed this real clean cut contemporary garden, and this girl is from the country and loves all natural and stone and flow and movement. And I'm like going, like, I remember sitting down on a Saturday evening when I came home and going, I spent 24 hours, I don't think I slept that night, just redesigning the whole garden, getting it all together. Okay. And that was a big thing, but people sort of forget about that when you're bunged up for 3 weeks and it's a solid garden build. You know, anybody that has done it, anybody that's thinking of doing it, anybody that has done the bloom show, like, it's an intense 3 week build and you have to be ready for it. And, you know, organizing is just key. But going back, it was a fantastic experience. There was four other designers and they were just fantastic. This year was a little bit different. Apart from everything else that happened, we were all in the one location. So that was absolutely fantastic. That was just amazing. It was brilliant. It worked. Us designers bounced off each other. We, you know, where problems came, we resolved them together. You know, and the four other designers were just really, really, you know, they were brilliant. Like, you know, everyone was helping each other out. And
okay, so these were five houses in a row then, was it?
These were five houses, not in actual row, in the same housing scheme. So they were like you know, 3 minutes from each other. And we were sort of going in, looking at each other's designs. And, you know, as I said, if a problem arose, you know, we sort of came together. And that was brilliant. And again, it probably made very good TV as well, because it became a bit of a reality show this year. It wasn't about Johnny down in Sligo and Mary over in Donegal. Like, it was, you know, we were all there and the cameras were on the whole time for the 3 weeks, and they were watching us bouncing off each other and, you know, things happening and the weather against us. So it became, I think it's the first year that I can honestly say it nearly became a reality show, and it worked. It really worked.
Yeah, no, it was a great show. Actually, I didn't see it all at the time, and I watched it back afterwards, and yeah, it was very good. Really, really good. So maybe tell us a little bit about your specific garden in that.
Yeah, I suppose for me, I started, I think, on a Saturday, sometime around the middle of February. And I just going back really quick, it was very intense, very moving, very quick, John, from design into build. So the design was nearly finished at a weekend. And then the following weekend, we had like people on the ground. Like I was sitting in the digger, you know, within 6 days, I was sitting in the digger, digging out the foundations. My particular garden itself, I call it Room Effect. Room Effect, the whole concept was having different areas in the garden for entertainment. And I had an orbital pathway that sort of linked all the areas, as I said, like the M50 drop off, you know, to the different areas. And I brought a little bit of work on myself because I decided to go down into the ground to have sunken area. I am a designer. I love levels. I love using levels to create size as well, and flow and movement and different areas. But I went down into the ground, and to be honest, I didn't realize at the time I ran into huge problems. Like anybody that seen the show, I went down into the ground. I was down a meter and I stuck a bar in the ground. And I mean, like, the crowbar completely disappeared into the ground. So I was down a meter already. And from the show, people didn't realize that. When the bar went into the ground on the TV, people were going, oh, that's a really wet site. I was already down a meter when that bar went into the ground, and it disappeared. So technically, you know, you were over 2 meters down where there was no solid floor where I was going to have a lawn area. So I ended up, and again, you didn't see this on TV, like people would be familiar, especially maybe some designers and gardeners listening to this, like people would be familiar with roll-on, roll-off skips. Mm-hmm. That garden was 12 by 12 and a half meters. By the time I was ready to actually construct my garden was 5 days after I started. And I took 7 roll-on, roll-off skips out of that garden.
Wow.
7.
Yeah, that was a lot of work that wouldn't be necessarily seen on the TV, yeah?
No, it wasn't. And to be honest, like, you know, it went to a stage where I found out sort of through the grapevine that there was a sort of an underground stream or a ditch at the back of them houses.
Okay.
So, you know, there was just slop filled in and a little bit of soil sprinkled over it. And that's what I ran. I ran into a huge problem there. Like, I mean, realistically, third or fourth day in, I was like, I won't say I was 50-50 going, like, will I just get a different garden? I was just so, you know, people was coming to me saying, you know, well, this happens all the time. And I was like, no, this doesn't happen all the time. Like, I build gardens full time. And like, this does not happen all the time. You do not go into a garden and go down 2 meters to find like solid ground. And then, you know, that was all the slop taken out. Then I had to backfill it. I had to get like stone and crushed rock and create a platform myself. So by going down into the ground, I brought a lot of stress and work on myself, not knowing what the problems were on the site, you know. But you know, looking back on it now, I'm delighted I did it. You know, it made the garden that different levels. But yeah, so the garden itself was sort of Room Effect. There was different areas. There was the sunken area. There was a waterfall. Again, a lot of people would be familiar with that. It was sort of like the main focal point of the garden. There was a little patio area down there for sort of evening. That was going to be turned into a trampoline. So again, look, different designers have different concepts. I'm a very sort of designer into a trampoline. To me, is a short term thing in a garden. And for anybody listening that has kids and what have you, and are looking to create a trampoline space, I'm going, do you know what, 6, 7, 8 years and it's gone, unless you have a lot of kids and there's a lot of sort of time span over, you know, 10 or 15 years. But I just find trampolines, personally, in my own gardens, I don't designate an exact area for it. I say, look, move it around the lawn. And then, because I have my own little lad myself, and like he's a teenager now, and like, I see how quick the trampoline, you know, disappeared. And
yeah, you get a few years, and yeah, if you're building in that in as a main feature.
If I had put it into the ground, it was like going, well, then there's a hole in there. And yeah, I was like going. So I actually stuck a patio there. Probably from a design point of view, it was probably like there was a lot of the same areas, like sitting areas or what have you. But that, I done that on purpose. But then you had the wraparound. You had a big sort of pergola in the far area. And I done a very country cottage planting scheme around that. The materials I used, I would have used a lot of Casarin materials. You know, I would be tied in with Casarin in relation to design and construction as a sort of like a freelance designer with Concern. So I use a lot of their products. They had a new big factory being built, and you know, we all the designers got the the joy of showcasing their new products.
Yeah.
So we all got that. Everybody was given whatever they wanted. And that was fantastic. So to be honest, I use a lot of their new products and some of their old products. I mixed up with a little bit of natural stuff as well, because I like using mix and match. The right material mixed and matched, natural and we call it like concrete products. You know, a good balance, and you can get it right. You know, that's very important. But so I had a lot of their materials, the different areas. We had the overhanging pergola, which was sort of like the adult sort of area. So when I would originally met the homeowner, you know, again, when you're designing a garden, you take all the aspects. So, you know, she had two small kids and they wanted an area which was their sort of their sunken grass area. And then we put this really chill out area up behind the back water feature. So the back the water feature, I elevated the stonework sort of to semi-hide it, that it was their little sort of hangout area. And that was their sort of chill area. And then they had the play area. And then Nicola herself had the adult area that, like, the pergola overhung, and it says the planting scheme was done around it. So, like, it was a nice mixture. I think for me, when I designed it, I remember sitting back at about 2 o'clock in the morning after finishing it, and I remember sitting back with a smile on my face, looking at the computer, going, "This is going to look absolutely class." And, you know, not being big headed, I thought it looked really, really well.
Yeah, no, it did. It was super, yeah. And there was quite a lot going on. You said 12 by 12 and a half meter garden, but there was a lot going on for that.
Yeah, I suppose really, you know, like, I design gardens, and I don't design gardens for a day. I design gardens for, you know, a good 7 months of the year. So to be honest, the planting scheme that I put in, I'd be very strong and knowledgeable on my plants. So the planting scheme, anybody that follows me on any of the social media platforms could see, like, the planting scheme. When it came into, you know, May, June, July, August, it was just like, I mean, bling. It was on fire. There was fantastic color there. And that is, like, that's my strong area, planting and using plants to complement each other. So, you know, it really, really worked out. And I suppose, like, looking at my design, you know, say even on Supergarden, like, you know, there was a lot of hard landscaping features in there. But, like, you know, a good designer could see the way it was planted up and the way it was structured planted and the herbaceous stuff that was planted. Like, you know, a good designer would see, well, this guy has done his homework. So come May, when people actually step out into the garden, like, I mean, the walls disappeared, the pathways disappeared, a lot of the structures, they just descended into the background. And that's what made that garden, you know.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. You've actually covered, like, we were going to talk about garden design tips, and you've kind of touched on a few of them there, so we might just expand on them a bit. And as I look at your social channels and things like that, you're very good, and you've mentioned it already, you're very good at you're very good at lots of things, but the few things that really stand out for me is you're very good at using, like, for example, if you're doing a pat, any of your social posts where there's pats in it, they're rarely straight, they're rarely singular color, so you're using multicolors and blending them together. And then you're planting. So while there might be quite a bit of hard landscaping, you know, on a site, you're using your planting very effectively to soften that. So the harder structures soften back into the background. And obviously that's not happening by accident. So maybe just tell us a bit of your sort of garden design tips.
Yeah, so look, I suppose really, John, if we start, like, broad or brass tacks in relation to just say, when I walk into a garden, you know, when I walk into a garden, I have a look around. I suppose the first and foremost thing I would look at in relation to, say, garden tips, what I'd be looking for, first thing would be sun orientation. Okay, sun orientation for me, when you walk into a garden, is number one. The first thing I will ask a client is, where does the sun start and where does it set? And that, to me, everything. And I know, like, you know, other designers have different concepts and the way they work their gardens. That, to me, is the most important thing, working the garden around the sun. You know, you're not going to put, like, so I could go into a north-facing garden and, you know, people might decide to put a big patio at the back door. I might just have a pat and they go, well, we'll bring the grass right into the back door because there's no point having a load of hardscaping there. So, you know, we'll put it up maybe at the back. So sun orientation in relation to a lot of features, where the patio goes, maybe where, you know, again, a lot of this new terminology, well, it's not new now, but, like, you know, fire pits is a big buzzword at the moment. And you're basically putting these elements into spots in the garden to work out at different times of the day. Again, outdoor pavilions, again, is another huge, or outdoor rooms are a huge, big buzz bling word at the moment. And again, when I'm designing a garden, the likes of an outdoor pavilion will go into a spot maybe to catch the evening sun or catch midday sun. So you're really having a look at sun orientation, and you're designing the areas around the sun. And that to me is one key element, I think, for any designer probably listening, or any designer that you know, designs on an ongoing basis. Like, just sun orientation is key.
Like, obviously sun orientation being your first thing, and your use of, as I said, not straight lines. You use a lot of curve, and
yeah. Again, John, I use a lot of, now I do, people like, I don't want to be referred as the circle designer, but I use a lot of circles and flow in my garden to create movement, you know, and atmosphere, you know, like movement and atmosphere, levels, all that sort of stuff to me is key, again, for good garden design. Another thing I will look at, and again, for your listeners, that's listening, I would look at how they're going to use their garden. So in relation to what exactly they're looking for in their garden. And that's when you were saying about pathways and movement and flow. So it's bringing people from point A to point B. So if I was going to have a barbecue area, I mightn't have it too far away from the house or too far away from the kitchen, that you're not lugging all this stuff over. Yeah. And again, I'll be linking paths and using pathways to flow, going from A to B. Another thing I would look at would be long and short distance views, and that might be going back again what you were saying about planting, where I would use key plants to maybe slightly screen an area that you're getting a long distance view of, maybe a feature tree or a nook light lit tree or something like that. So I use focal points and different views a lot in the garden. But yeah, again, anybody that sort of follows me, you know, my paths and sort of what have you, my linkage areas, I do create a lot of movement and a lot of flow, and I use different materials, you know, to bounce one off the other. So I might say, for an edging brick, I might use a dark color, maybe a black limestone or something. And I might use, you know, a sandy colored set for the main thing, or an inch pathway, something. I use colors to complement each other rather than blending in, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd be strong on some of my colors, and it works. Like, sometimes a lot of people are afraid to have a look at materials and, you know,
mix them together.
Mix them and go too far away from each other, but you actually get more out of your garden when you're a little bit bolder.
Yeah.
So that would be one sort of little tip that I would use when you're using materials. And again, anybody that's, you know, thinking of doing a garden, like, I go into gardens every day of the week, and, you know, all my customers get samples to get to see, you know, what exactly they're doing. So, like, for somebody that's looking at, say, a patio or a little path or what have you, you know, go to the different places and have a look at them. Or if you're getting a gardener, or a landscape designer in, you know, have a look at the different options. Don't be looking at the simple, you know, what everyone else is doing. Like, there's loads of stuff out there. There's some amazing products, some new products on the market. Brilliant. Like, you know, be a little bit creative, be a little bit bold, you know.
Yeah. The other thing that stands out, and you do this through several ways, the other thing that stands out from your designs is your use of garden lighting. And this was one of the sort of first things we spoke about. You're using a lot of different types of lights. You're using uplighters in planted areas. You're using, in some cases, pat lights. You're also using things like lanterns with, I presume it's not candles, but you're using lanterns, hanging lanterns and different things like that.
Yeah.
So maybe talk to us a little bit about garden lighting and the importance of it. And
yeah, look, it's an area, to be honest, John, that gets sort of like left in the background, you know. And again, it's probably down to a little bit of budget as well and foresight, you know. But yeah, it sort of gets left by the wayside. So when I'm designing a garden, what I will do is I will look at lighting. I use a thing called loops. Okay, I just use, there's a couple of terms I use myself, they're just my own personal thing, but I use loops. So when I would go to the homeowner, when I'd be talking about lighting, I would be going like, okay, we're going to have 3 or 4 loops in the garden. Now what that means is, just say we're going to put in a water feature, right? That needs a cable brought right out. So anybody that's thinking of looking at doing a garden in the next little while, again, these are good little tips, to be honest. So I would look at my loops. The first loop I would probably do would be straight over to the water feature. Now, what I mean by loops is, I mean switches on the wall.
Yeah.
So you can actually have 5 switches inside in your kitchen. You can turn on the water feature and turn it off. You need direct power going out to that. Another loop might be plugs around the garden. I know it's not lighting, but it's still part of your sort of your whole electrical, we'll call it, network.
Yeah.
And that would be a second loop. That could be not on a switch, but it could be just a direct power. Another one that I will be looking at will be spotlighting. So spotlighting and feature lighting would be spotlights on you know, feature trees, on feature walls, on the likes of brickwork or stonework. It could be spotlight even on the water feature. So that'd be sort of spotlights. I use another thing as well, another loop called shadow lighting, where I will have uplights behind, you know, maybe topiary trees or topiary plants to get the shadow and the shape,
okay,
or in behind bamboo. Like, that's something that a lot of people, anybody who's gone to college and studied garden design, that would be an area that they would have had a look at, shadow lighting. So I like creating shadows. As I said, I look into lighting a nice little bit when I do my gardens. But shadow lighting would be another one. And then another one could be just like feature lighting, like, you know, up-down lighters on stonework, down off pergolas. There could be strip lighting underneath seats. And then the last sort of loop could be electrical, or could be do through candles or what have you, because, like, you know, candles create lovely ambience in a garden or any inside in the house or anywhere. But the likes of the bling, as I call it, the lanterns and what have you, you know, it's key locations. Obviously, they look really, really, really well, but they also light up the areas and create character and atmosphere, you know.
Yeah.
So they're my sort of loops. Like, another little tip would be, why would I create loops? One could be, you could be in your kitchen, and the doors could be open, and you can turn off all your lights, and you can leave the water feature on its own. That'd be to do with a loop. So you're just getting one key location light on its own, on a lit up feature that, you know, creates lovely atmosphere. Then you can have a look at during the day. Obviously, you don't want to have the, maybe you might want to have the water feature on, or the light on the water feature on. So these are little things that, you know, you sort of look and you can turn off the light on the water feature, turn it on at nighttime. You might decide to leave on the water or off the water feature and just have the uplighters on the plants.
Yeah.
You might just want the pathways lit to your outdoor little pavilion, and you don't want anything else. So it just gives you, it gives you a little bit of playground to decide what you want to light up and what you don't want to light up. You
it's
know,
it's a good idea as well at the very start, and you sort of alluded to it. Sometimes the you know, the overall garden budget doesn't stretch to lighting. But
yeah,
but if you're, if you're in that construction phase of building whatever it is outside and putting mm-hmm. shape on your garden, it's a really good idea to just put some of those loops, some of those wires there, and eventually there'll be a budget and you'll be able to come back in and you'll have your wire there. You're not going digging up again. So it is
a very good point, Sean, to be honest. That is a very good point. It happens to be in gardens on and off, where we will just throw the cables in, we will walk away. And, you know, the homeowner might ring you in 2 years and go, Dermot, you know, we're thinking about the lighting now. Could you recommend any good lights, or what are you thinking? And yeah, like, the infrastructure is there, you know.
Yeah,
but definitely. Yeah, a very good point if you don't have a budget for it. You know?
For sure. Outdoor rooms have become, obviously, they were starting to become popular anyway, because, well, I was going to say in Ireland, but they're quite popular everywhere. Like, I've a big percentage of listeners in the US and in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and they're popular everywhere, but particularly here in Ireland, because I suppose our really super days for sitting out are in some ways limited. So by getting the cover over it, that allows you, obviously keeps the rain off you, number one, if you do get a bit of rain, but you can also put heat into it. You can create atmosphere in it, and they have become very, very popular. And I would say probably even more so in the last 12 months. Obviously, people are at home and so on. So I've seen some great variations of it, and I know you do some fantastic ones. So what are you seeing there in terms of trends with outdoor rooms?
Yeah, looking again, John, trends, I think, in the last couple of years, I think Irish culture, and I don't know if this is right across the board for everybody, but this is just me. I think Irish culture has been changing over the last 10 years. You know, the big volumes, if you look at the culture going back even the 90s and 80s, especially the 90s, up to maybe 2002, it was all about on the Saturday night. The couple going out, mm-hmm. you know, no matter where you were going out on Saturday night. Him and her went on a Saturday night. I done a lot of bar work going back years ago. So nearly if someone in the village was missing from the pub on a Saturday or Sunday night, they were either dead or they were on holidays.
You were going looking for them. Where are they?
Yeah, you're going looking for them. Get in here. So, culture has really, really changed. I think from, like, you know, the mid-2000s sort of on, culture was changing. I think come 2009, 10, 11, things were really taking the point that, you know, the younger age weren't going out on the beer every weekend, and you know, they were not really doing that sort of stuff. They were sort of going to friends' houses and hanging out, but the whole really strong culture, pub, Irish pub culture, had gone.
Yeah,
and I think people will agree with me. It's you know, especially country pubs in town. A lot of people still go into the city centre, but like country pubs and country areas, definitely the whole culture had gone. So now we jump back to gardens and we have a look, and like people were creating, you know, their gardens and designers. So you look at your outdoor pavilion or outdoor rooms or rooms built off houses. So where you're really extending your house outside, and I think for middle-aged people now that are not sort of going, having their drinks, they're looking at bringing friends over to their house. So culture definitely has changed. To me, the new social hub of, we'll say, the early part of the night, even for teenagers, it's all about going to each other's houses and having places. So when I'm designing gardens and I'm talking to homeowners and I'm looking at the brief, I give them a quick questionnaire when they get the original design, before obviously I start design, and they will get a questionnaire, a fairly complex questionnaire, and it will look at kids and look at, you know, how is the garden going to be used. But the whole outdoor pavilion thing, really, I think, is it going to be the new social hub of Ireland? Is it going to be where the teenagers will come, you know, and hang out with their friends and then maybe go out? Because teenagers, they're still going out, you know, like they're 19, 20, you know, from 18 to say 28-year-old, there's still a lot of people going out, but they're going out late at night.
Yeah.
Like it has changed. So they're going to each other's houses. So what I can see is these outdoor pavilions are sort of becoming the new teens, mid-20s hubs of socializing in Ireland, you know, and then I think it might go out later.
Possibly even past that then as well. And as you said, the culture was changing. It has become for the next, you know, the next older generation and the generations after that, it's becoming, your outdoor dining has become hugely important. So your dining stroke socializing is happening in these spaces now. I know for certain people they're going very elaborate, and it's becoming their, you know, their area to watch sports or their area to watch a concert or whatever it is. So yeah, they're definitely becoming, and I'm not going to say they're becoming the pub of the 90s, but they're certainly becoming a really important area for people to, I suppose, you know, have their social life, have their chill out space. And yeah, it has become way more significant in the garden.
Definitely. It's, you know, I can see it because I'm right stuck in the middle of the whole lot. So yeah, as you said, you know, there's little pool tables going in, there's like bars, there's indoor, outdoor bars, there's fireplaces, there's stoves going in. But the one thing you can't dictate in Ireland is the sun in the sky.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the main reasons these things are being built bigger and better. Because, you know, you can go down to the end of the garden or go out into your garden, and you can, during the day, if it's a nice sunny day, you can entertain outside, you can have your fire pits and your patio areas. And then in the evening time, you retreat into these outdoor pavilions. And again, it's just a design thing, and it's just a tip, another little tip. Again, I always orientate the outdoor pavilion that the sun comes in the evening time, you know, if you have the opportunity that you can orientate an outdoor room, but just try and have it that, you know, it acts as an even sort of chill with the sun coming in, you know. But
what are you seeing? We've kind of touched on it a little bit, but what are you seeing in current trends?
Current trends, to be honest, like, and again, I just find myself, and again, Super Garden, I know I'm going back on and off on Super Garden, but Super Garden was fantastic to look at trends and see what was happening. But colours, I find colours, people are looking a lot more into colours on their walls now, their garden walls or different types of timber. You know, colours becoming a big thing, because I don't know what it is. Is it a male or a female thing? More female, because females are really, really good at interior design. They will paint walls any colour, any shade, and they're real confident. The minute they walk out the back door, it's boom. Mm-hmm. It's just, and a lot of people, men are not orientated that way at all. They're just four grey walls or just full walls. But definitely, I think now, people are looking at colours. They're actually looking at really new, fresh colours and colours that complement each other. And they're going, like, you know, getting colour samples and colour boards and looking at what's going on well. And that's a big sort of trend at the moment, colours. Again, no, we did touch on it a few minutes ago where materials. So like a pavilion, if we weren't going to do timber, we might do a really nice timber tile, sort of like a tile timber effect.
Yeah.
That's another sort of trend that's there at the moment. And again, a lot of materials going on the on the walls of water features or pavilions. There's one called, I think it's liquid metal I'm using at the moment, and there's different, it's quite a funky, cool tile that you can bend around corners and what have you.
Wow.
So there is loads of new materials on the out there to be looking at different types of, as you said, what's trending. Huge trend, everyone's talking about it, is outdoor fire pits. Me on outdoor fire pits, just to be very careful, because you know it's where you design it as well, that there's not like a wind pocket coming around the corner, and the next thing you have a designated area, and the next thing it's like in her face and his face and in everyone's face, and then 5 minutes later. So just be careful. I have to say, the gas ones, you know, if you're curtailing a small garden, the gas ones, I would nearly sort of say, you know, if it's not in your budget to build, you know, wait. The gas ones are sort of bulletproof, you know. There's not a big load of smoke, or, you know, wind is really going to catch it. They're very well designed.
Yeah.
So outdoor fire pits is huge at the moment. Like, I'm designing fire pits everywhere. And you might have seen it on my social media, the majority of fire pits that I design, I actually design for two things. I design it for a fire pit, but I also design it as a tabletop. So it becomes a multifunctional thing. So if people find, you know, if you completely design a fire pit, and what happens down the road if it's just not being used?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's not being used, or maybe we don't have the weather. So what I always do is create a tabletop over it, that you can have a tabletop and you can use it as a seating area, sort of a semi-sunken seating area. And then for a couple of times a year, you want your fire pit, you just pop off the tabletop, flip it off, and away you go.
Yeah.
And I also find as well, you'll find in relation to the design, what's interesting is, and again, it's over the last couple of years, just designing, you'll find the kids don't really hang out where the parents hang out. So if you have a fire pit area and it's a lot cooler and you've semi-sunken and it's built-in seating and all that, you'll find if you do have a tabletop that the kids will congregate there, or the little parties or little friends, and then the parents will stay over in their big main area. And it just works. Yeah. It just works. But that's sort of fire pits.
Yeah. And in terms of trends, and I know you're very strong on plants, and it's quite important to you in your garden design. What trends are you seeing in planting? For me, looking at it, a lot of the biggest trends at the moment are, you touched on it earlier, the cottage planting, the planting for biodiversity. All those things are very.
Yeah, it is huge. And again, you know, as I said, a lot of people would sort of associate with me with super gardening. If they followed me on social media, they could see the way that sort of whole country cottage biodiversity sort of scheme came to the forefront. But me, the way, and again, it's just a little, it's a little term that I use. I use a terminology called layering. So when I go into design a garden, John, and have a look at it, I'll layer it up. So this is what you don't see off camera, and even say in the likes of Bloom and Show Gardens and the Chelsea's. So it actually makes a lot of common sense, but I don't know, is it ever spoke about, or maybe it is in books that I'm not a big, I don't read a lot of garden books, or I don't look at a lot of garden stuff. I take my inspiration from other things.
Yeah.
But I use the thing, and it's if somebody was thinking of doing up their garden or planting their garden, and again, this is going back into sort of, it'll touch off trends. So by layering, what I do is, when you go in and you get a bare ground and you build up your garden, as you spoke about earlier on, like balancing the hard and soft landscaping. So I will layer it up. So I will start with, my first layer will be my feature plants, my topiary, my feature plants, maybe internal hedges. And again, if you got to see Bloom Garden being built, you'll see this is actually how it happens. Same with Super Garden. So all the structure plants will go in first. Okay.
Yep.
That's your first layer. That's your sort of your main base. And then the next layer that goes in will be your flowering shrubs. It will be your fillers, stuff that's going to like flower sort of, you know, or hold on to their leaves, or textures, or, you know, astilleas, stuff like that. You're sort of your structure and your fillers. That's your second sort of layer. The third layer, I call it the bling. It's the bling. It's the, you know, the agapanthuses, you know, your color, hydrangeas, all that sort of stuff. That's just going to be the bling. As again, going back to your Blooms or your Chelsea flower shows, when you walk in, you just go, wow, look at the color.
Yeah.
That's my third player. That's really the cosmetic stuff.
Yeah.
And that would be sort of my three layers. But the likes of, say, trends in relation to planting, I think topiary, there's a lot of people using topiary, the Bux's balls, and different types of structured planting that has become very big in the last couple of years. It's gone quite expensive, a lot of that sort of stuff, because again, we are importing really 99.9% of the likes of big plants like that. But definitely it's a trend. Cool looking plants, trendy looking plants, anything with a bit of a structure on it. The likes of colour, again, hydrangeas, agapanthuses, nepenthelias, dahlias. You know, I could stay going and going and going with plants, but like, I suppose really for if I go to hydrangeas, has been just a huge plant.
Yeah, there's some gorgeous hydrangeas over the last few years.
Absolutely.
They're not the big sort of rigid looking hydrangeas, the old fashioned ones. They're a lot of them are feathery. They're oak leaves and they kind of wave a little bit in the wind. They're a lot nicer than, you know, the old traditional hydrangea that people would recognize.
Yeah, and again, like, you know, hydrangeas was always sort of an acidic sort of plant where, you know, you had strong colors and, you know, it came into different soils around Leinster, and the next thing it started going, you know, it started looking poor. But like, you know, your Annabelle's there at the moment is a really, really big one. Another plant that I love, and a lot of people, I find a lot of people are really sort of coming on it, is the viburnums, the popcorns or the rotundifoliums. It's has been a sort of a color scheme that a lot of people are using, keeping it sort of like a nice sort of tidy palette, your whites, your blues, your silver, stuff that's going to work well together and blend, nothing too really, really strong. And then on the other side of stuff, if you're going to go for yellows and oranges and stuff, you need to see nearly sort of keep that color palette. But yeah, a couple of plants, you know, your cornices, just beautiful plants out there. You know, it's you go into, like, I'm a disaster for plants. I mean, I go into a nursery and I buy for a job, and I end up spending like a couple of €100 on plants just to bring home to the garden to keep them in, because they're gorgeous. Yeah. It's just a disaster. It's like the guy going into Brown Thompson's and blowing the credit card. I just walk into a nursery and I'm like going, next thing the lorry pulls up at the house and goes, geez, what am I have to buy now? I'm just a disaster for plants, to be honest. I love, I do small little bit of propagation myself in the tunnel at home. And I like, actually, it's like my downtime where I will actually go out into the tunnel on a Sunday and start taking cuttings. You know, where people might think, you know, you'll do something else. Me, therapy is actually like taking cuttings.
So we mentioned there layering, and I suppose it is spoken about, it is in the books, but to give a real sort of simple way of it's basically you're getting your higher plants and mid-level plants and lower plants, and they're all planted in such that when your planting is finished, they look like they're all blended into one another.
It's more or less that, John. And so different people have said that's the way I sort of go about it. And I don't know that people sort of dissected like that before, but like if you took a bloom garden from the, you know, just when the planting started, you'll see, as I said, you'll see all the stuff going in at different, you'll see the structure stuff going in first. And again, what you said is, you know, the larger stuff at the back of the bed, the mid stuff, and the smaller stuff at the front, depending on, or it could be vice versa if it was a double sided bed. But planting is fantastic. I was always a lot into, or, you know, I was strong on sort of hard landscaping, and I always loved my plants. I worked in nurseries over the years as well, and anybody that wants to learn their plants, you know, go into a nursery. Personally, if you can get into a nursery that does everything, that does a bit of propagating, that does a bit of potting on, getting plants in, but that you're sort of mixed with everything, especially propagation, because you really learn your plants in propagation, because you're actually going out looking at the plant, and you have to memorize, and you bring it in, and you're working with it, and then, you know, you're taking the cuttings. But if you can get into a nursery, you want to learn your plants, and nursery is one place you're going to learn your plants. Anybody in a nursery would be far superior with plant knowledge than a lot of landscapers, even out on the streets.
It gives you a good understanding then as well, because you mentioned there earlier on about topiary, and, you know, that it has gone quite expensive, and it's nearly all brought in from Holland, predominantly Holland and Italy, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But like, you even take a 30 centimeter or a 45 centimeter Bux's ball, like that plant has been nurtured on a nursery. The 45 centimeter has been nurtured on a nursery for maybe 8-9 years. So, I suppose it gives you that understanding.
You're paying for time. You're really paying for time. And I think, you know, I was in a nursery 2 days ago, and I just looked at the tree, and I actually put it up on my story, and I think it was like 11,500, and people would be like, oh my god, is that for a tree? Like, I've seen trees for 30 grand. I've seen, you know, semi-mature oak trees, root ball, for 37,000. But, you know, the thing about these plants, and again, a lot of people go, oh my god, the price of that, you're paying for time. you know, like if you go back to the little guy that actually took that cutting, and if you said to him, like, if you done a job for me today, John, and I said to you, look, I'm going to pay you in 8 years, is that fine? You go,
yeah. Yeah, no, there is a lot of time. Okay, has gone into some of those plants, and I think that's you know, people get a little bit of a shock sometimes looking at, especially the likes of the topiary. But there is so much work and time has gone into it prior to that. And that's why if you have ever been on a nursery and worked on a nursery, you'll kind of understand that side of it.
Yeah, and that's like, it's nearly like, you know, and another thing, farming. All you see is like the cow or whatever. You don't see like all the stuff that goes into the land and, you know, the background stuff that's done to get a bullock or whatever to a certain stage. So when you have a Bucks's Ball, it came from a little cutting, you know, it had a certain mixture, all the different nutrients put into the growing medium. And then you came along again and it had to be potted on and then potted on again and different size pots and more labour and everything. So by the time it comes to a 50, 60 centimetre Bucks's Ball, like it's been through a lot of hands and you know,
sure,
different pots and sizes and what have you. But it's definitely a whole industry that is going to balloon and explode over the next couple of years. Like, it's all going to be home and garden for the next couple of years. People are going to be looking at their homes, looking at their gardens. There'll be extensions being put on, there'll be outdoor rooms going in, there'll be fire pits, there'll be patio areas. Everyone nearly wants now to bring people over and open the back doors and go, oh wow. You know, it's where that might have been the house once upon a time. Now it's the garden.
Certainly an exciting time for gardening. And like some of the statistics coming out of the UK, since the lockdown, I think it was 2.7 million new gardeners, which they defined as somebody who never spent money on gardening before. And in this year has spent, I think the figure was £20.
Okay.
Like that is a lot of new gardeners, but that also doesn't take into account the fact that there was whatever amount of existing gardeners who have just been doing a lot more of it because they've had more time on their hands. So,
yeah,
and I'm sure the figures are kind of replicated around the world. And there is no doubt that there's a lot of people gardening and doing more gardening, which can only be good.
Yeah, you will find, and I have seen it, where a lot of sort of like, say, people in the industry that have come on in the last little while, they might have been builders or they might have been in different sort of industry and they're coming in. And I think that's where really sort of designers flourish, because again, going back to the whole garden design thing, where you have balance is key. Balance, soft, to me, you know, two things. I said sun orientation, one, but balance to me between soft and hardscaping is key. And any of my gardens you'll see on social media, or have seen me do, you know, it's balance. It's all about balance. It's all about, like, you know, you don't come out the back door and it's like Concrete City and it's just like a patio. Again, if you go back to my super garden, you will look at every single element of that garden had pockets of soil everywhere. So when you seen that garden in May, June, July, it was just like balance. It was just, not being cocky, but it was perfect. Like, it was balanced so well. Soft, hard landscaping, it was key. And that, to me, is somebody that's looking to get their garden done or getting a designer to do it, you know, it's important getting that key, that when you come out, it's, you don't feel like it's all about patio and paving and walls and everything, you know, it's balanced. Yeah. And, you know, you go to a show garden in the likes of Bloom or Chelsea or any of them garden shows, again, you look in and it's just perfect. It's just balanced between soft and hardscape, you know.
Yeah, for sure. You've given us some super tips there, and it was really good. Your social channels, we've kind of mentioned them a couple of times, but they're really superb. So maybe tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, look, I suppose I do a lot of vlogging, as they call it now, on Instagram. So you just find me on Dermatmelia, .gardens. You'll get me on Instagram. And on Facebook, it's the Garden Design Studio. I haven't really changed it yet, but it's the Garden Design Studio, but one is linked to the other. And like, it's like everybody, it's like if you stick my name into Google, your computer or your phone will probably go on fire. You'll definitely get me, you know.
Yeah. Your Instagram stories, your Instagram page is superb. And you'll see what we were talking about there, the, you know, the lighting, the different colors, the movement, the planting, you'll see all of that if you have a look at the it's particularly the Instagram account. It's really, really good.
Yeah, look, I think I think people as well, John, you know, they're online, they're looking at stuff, and you know, they're following the likes of Instagram accounts, and they're looking at what's been done, irrespective if they get that designer or don't get that designer. And people are fussy as well, like, you know, they might like one designer over another designer, and they go, well, I don't like his stuff because it's straight lines, or I don't like that guy because it's circles and curves, or, you know, so, like, you know, people are looking at, or some other people, they like different elements from different designers, you know. But
sure, It's information and inspiration, as someone put it a few weeks ago, and that's what it's all about. Is having a
look. That is what it's all about. That's what it's all about, John. Just information, for sure. And you know, yeah, absolutely.
So, Dermot, it's taken us a few weeks to nail it down, but it was super. Really, really delighted with that. Yeah, you've given some great tips to our listeners. So, thank you very, very much for coming on Master My Garden podcast.
No problem. Look, thank you very much for having me, John.
So that's been this week's episode. A huge thanks to Dermot for coming on. That was really, really great chat. As I said, check out his Instagram account, particularly the use of lighting, the use of curves, and what he seems to be really good at. As I said at the start, if there's a big house, big building, he's very good at softening the landscape in front of it so that it doesn't feel as imposing. And yeah, you'll get some great tips on that if you check it out. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with all your gardening friends. And you can find me on the social channels. It's Master My Garden on Instagram and Master My Garden on Facebook. So this is our last kind of full episode before Christmas. Next week's one will actually fall on Christmas Day, so it won't be a garden related one at all. But as I said, it will be an episode of some sort next week. So thanks for listening. And until the next time, happy gardening.